All right, Jen Cooper, the Keeper, here for the next episode of the Mix Zone Women's Soccer Podcast. This is a special bonus episode, two podcasts in 1 week, but we're still going to give this one a number. This is podcast number 94. And 1994 was the year that there was the first live TV broadcast of a U.S. women's national team game. And if you want to see that game, you can actually get the tape, or rather, I guess it's a DVD now, from Dave Brett Wasser in Austin. Just go to davebrett.com. And you can reach out to him. And that's two T's in Brett. So davebrett.com. You can see the first ever live TV broadcast of the U.S. Women's National Team. Also, 1994, when North Carolina won the 1994 NCAA title, that was their ninth consecutive NCAA title. Obviously, they have way more than nine titles, but that 94 was nine in a row. No one's had that long of a streak since, but just wanted to give a shout out to that team from 1994. All right, so continuing with the NWSL preview theme, I spoke with Equalizer Soccer's Dan LaLetta about the prospects for Sky Blue FC this season. And we also discussed Wednesday's U.S. national team match against Colombia, since Dan was lucky enough to be in very cold Hartford, Connecticut for the game. Then I spoke with Jamie Goldberg, the Oregonian's Thorns beat reporter, about the unique challenges that Portland and Mark Parsons face in this fourth NWSL season. For next week's episode, I will take a look at the Western New York Flash and the Boston Breakers to wrap up the preview coverage. Keep in mind, I am not doing a preview of Orlando Pride, just, you know, I've been focusing on the 2015 clubs, but instead we'll see some extra Pride coverage after their club's first few matches. All right, Jen Cooper, the Keeper, here with Dan LaLetta, managing editor of EqualizerSoccer.com. Dan was at the U.S. women's game last night in East Hartford. Dan, how was it to be there for one of their very, very cold match? Not quite the snow match, but pretty cold.
Well, I was happy to be in the press box. I think a snow match might have been more pleasant. And I don't know if this was all over, because as I was heading up to Hartford and making my little stops along the way, it was cold, but doable. But when I got to the stadium, the wind outside the stadium was intense. And I can't believe that 21,000 plus people actually sat through that game. And they were loud. They were into the game. So I give them full credit. And when we spoke to the players, which was about maybe an hour or so after the final whistle, by the time the last group of players came out, they were all very clearly still cold. Hope Solo said she was cold. Allie Long came out with, I don't know what, as a quasi sort of a scarf thing covering up her ears. So the conditions were not spectacular. And Colombia had only been in the States for about 2 days, and they said it was a lot warmer in Colombia. The national team had been training in Florida. But it was fun to be there. It's a nice stadium. And I thought it was the best performance of the year, all things considered, by the U.S.
Well, and speaking of Hope Solo, I think that's the first time I've seen her wear that scarf in a game. Like, I've seen that scarf look for training a lot, you know, when it's really cold. But I was like, wow, I guess that's FIFA-approved gear that she can, you know, wear that scarf in the game.
And then she actually admitted that she was cold and said that she has some, I didn't know this, but she said she has some circulation issues, all things being equal, and that the cold didn't help. And obviously the U.S. was in attack mode for most of the game, so she didn't have an incredible amount of work to do, which is par for the course against a team like Colombia. So it's I wouldn't have wanted to be out there. I think the only worst thing than being the goalkeeper probably would be being a bench player.
Right. And speaking of bench players, of course, I have to bring up, you know, a very familiar rant of, wouldn't you have thought maybe at halftime leading 4-0 that we could have seen a goalkeeper change?
Well, we've been discussing this for a year or two on the
Yes.
I mean, we know Hope Solo is the goalkeeper in Rio. I don't know that we know who the backup is necessarily.
Right.
And yeah, I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it happen. I would definitely. And really, when this is over, you know, we need to find out who's next in line. Like, let's just go on the assumption there's, what, five games left and then Rio.
Right.
When that's over, now you have almost 3 years until the next World Cup.
Right.
And even if Hope Solo says, I want to be the keeper in the next World Cup, sure, great. Let her be the keeper in the next World Cup. But you got to start building depth at the position.
Right. And we've got these two great backups in
Alyssa Nair and Ashlyn Harris, and between them, I think they're just over 10 caps. And that's what concerns me, because we know goalkeeper needs more experience than anything else. You need those minutes. Not to take anything away, like you said, that it's like, yeah, she's your keeper for Rio, but it seems like this is, to me, this is a little bit of a holdover of the World Cup effect, where it's like you knew which players were going to be used, whereas on the field, we're seeing some fascinating changes and mix-ups and substitutions. But I feel like U.S. soccer is so focused on, let's get her to the 100 shutouts and the 200 cap mark, you know, where it's like, I don't see the value in that. She's already, you know, the U.S. leader for shutouts. She's already the world leader for caps for goalkeepers. You know, it's like, what's...
Well, you know, every number has a story, and she had to make one or two interesting plays in the game against Colombia, I suppose. I wouldn't say that there have certainly been harder earned clean sheets than that one. There have been clean sheets probably that came a lot easier than that one. But right. Yeah, you know, like every number has a story. And I actually think, you know, we talk a lot about the shape, and last, you know, that game it was 4-3-3. Is it going to be 4-3-3? And how do you get Alex Morgan, and who's going to play with Alex Morgan, and were they better as a team because Morgan wasn't on the field for that game? But to me, clearly the most indispensable player on that roster is Hope Solo.
Right. Right. Because your drop off, you know, to your backup keeper is so huge.
Yeah. And I mean, Sauerbrunn pound for pound is a better player than Solo, but I think you could fill in for Sauerbrunn easier than you could fill in for Solo, my opinion.
Right. Well, let's talk about the starting lineup. I mean, first, what did you think when you saw that Allie Long was starting?
Well, a little bit surprised. Now, obviously, Morgan Bryan had the hamstring, so she wasn't dressed for the game, may or may not play on Sunday in Chester. I kind of feel like if you're going to have a player come in, as long as she doesn't embarrass herself in training, why not put her on the field? So a little bit surprised, because that's not normally what happens in these situations, but glad that she was able to get that opportunity. And honestly, I was surprised she got called into camp. I was a little surprised to see her in the lineup. And I think now that the game is over, I think she's now got to be in the conversation for Jill, where she has to at least be thinking in the back of her mind, could this be a player who sticks and that I have to take to Brazil with me?
Right. Or at the very least, crack the four alternates, you know, even if she doesn't make the 18.
Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, just a very different approach. Like you said, I was surprised too. I mean, one, that she got called in, because we kind of felt that, I think most of us felt that early summer 2014 look that she got was kind of like, all right, here's your last chance. But at the same time, we know that Jill has a freedom now that clearly she didn't have, you know, leading up to the Women's World Cup. And I really enjoyed seeing what she's putting out each game, who's coming into camp, you know, and that just that there's some change and you're seeing some young players get in the mix. And of course, speaking of young, you know, Mallory Pugh had a great assist, and another goal. So, you know, what are your thoughts on Pugh so far, who in just a few months is already up to 10 caps?
I thought she was actually kind of quiet in the game on a minute one to minute 90 or however long she lasted sort of way. But the fact that she was able to get on the end of Carly Lloyd's pass and then return the favor to Carly Lloyd, I think that says a lot about Mallory Pugh, because soccer players who attack need to make their mark on the game. And you don't need to make your mark over 90 minutes. You need to make your mark over about 9 seconds. And I remember after the NWSL final last year, Vlatko Andonovski said that he met with Amy Rodriguez individually the night before the game. And he said, you're going to make a difference in this game. He said, even if you're frustrated for the first 80 minutes or 85 minutes, keep working, because you're going to make a difference in this game. And if you watch that game back, that's pretty much exactly how it happened. She was almost a virtual non-factor, but she got her one opportunity and she made good on it. So with Mallory Pugh at 17, it wasn't quite to the extreme of Amy Rodriguez in the final, but if she can already take a quiet game and make a little bit of an impact, I think that's spectacular. And I think Colombia defended very aggressively, so they somewhat took away her ability to use her speed. Clearly, Colombia got exhausted in defending after about a half an hour, and certainly by the second half they had it and clearly didn't have enough substitutes to really make up for any deficiencies they had in terms of fitness. But I thought they did a good job of taking away some of what Pugh does best.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up, you know, Colombia and fitness, because, you know, this is the first time the teams faced each other in a friendly, which meant more than three subs. You know, they had only met in the World Cup and the Olympics before, where you're limited to three subs. In a situation like this, I mean, weather aside, which was already a big factor for Colombia, with the U.S. being able to use six subs, I mean, Colombia was already spent. And then, you know, U.S. is just bringing in depth. You know, that was it was pretty rough for that second half.
It really was. In the U.S., as you said, the, you know, Leo Cuellar, the coach of Mexico, was saying that you could fill three entire World Cup rosters of forwards with just the players that the U.S. has. And I tweeted during the game at some point, stop me if you've heard this before, Colombia, parentheses, fill in the blank team, could be really good if they got a little investment in the team. You know, they're not bad. They've got some skilled players. They defended bravely. You know, they didn't sit back. You know, they weren't stepping forward and high pressuring the U.S., but they weren't just sitting back and waiting for the final moment to defend. You know, they're okay. They beat France at the World Cup. They darn near beat the United States at the World Cup, to be honest, a much different United States team in that moment in the round of 16. And they've been probably, that was really the game with the yellow cards that forced them into the formation change. And we know all about that.
Right.
But yeah, and then you talk to the players and they haven't played since July. They don't know if there's any more games after Sunday. They've been together for 12 days. They haven't really had camps. Now there's word that they haven't been paid. There might be a dispute with the federation. But you know what? Remember when the WNBA had a lockout and David Stern basically said at some point, all right, look, we're going to solve it by this day or we're just pulling the plug on the whole thing?
Uh-huh.
Colombian women do not have anywhere near the sort of leverage, I'm sure, in Colombia that the U.S. women have here with U.S. soccer and the
right.
general public, for that matter.
Right. Yeah, it's a challenge. You know, I had people ask me at the watch party last night, they're like, isn't this an Olympic team too? It's like, well, it's a different story. You know, like you said, not having played since July, you know, having one camp, not having that consistent structure, you know, resources available, and, you know, and if it's true, not getting paid, it's like that, none of that's going to help. So what do you think is going to happen with Sunday's game where, you know, here you've got a pretty tired Colombia team that doesn't have a lot of depth. U.S. just has more depth. And I would imagine it's still going to be pretty cold Sunday, even though they're moving down to Philly.
Well, that stadium's right on the water, so the wind can whip pretty good there, too. I haven't looked at the weather forecast. I was trying to get out of Jill Ellis and even some of the players, how do you kind of stay motivated after you've already thumped a team by 7 goals, and now you're playing them again, and they figure to have fitness issues? Because the U.S. can start a whole bunch of players who didn't even see the field in the first game that are better than anything that Colombia has. So hopefully the U.S. changes the shape a little bit, maybe changes some of their tactics a little bit. You don't want to get too cute because as much as we're calling out for backup goalkeepers and experiments, it is now 5 games left until the Olympics. You don't have any idea what you're going to get from Japan, who is all of a sudden in a major period of transition. That's their next game after this one. But yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you know, in the men's side, you don't play consecutive friendlies against the same team because
yeah.
it just doesn't make any sense.
Right.
In fact, you don't even play friendlies against a team that you might see in the group stage, but there aren't enough countries that aren't qualified into the Olympics to fill out these slots.
Well, and then also you have the complicating factor of all of these FIFA dates. Most of the European teams are in the middle of their Euro qualifying.
Yep.
You know, so that really limits who they can play. Well, let's move on. Let's move from country to club. Let's talk about Sky Blue, your home club. You know, you're doing the analyst role for the Sky Blue broadcast this year, and you did it last year, of course, too. Talk about, you know, the losses for Sky Blue over last season. Of course, you had Jim Gabara moving back to kind of his home turf for the Washington Spirit, you know, used to be the Washington Freedom. What other player movements have there been away from the club?
Well, I mean, let's not fool ourselves. There have been a bunch. Brittany Cameron, lover or hater, was a pretty good keeper for them for 3 seasons. She's in Japan. They now have 90 minutes of NWSL experience on the roster, and it's not like they have somebody with any experience playing any more minutes than that overseas. Katie Friels, 39 consecutive starts in central midfield for Sky Blue. She's taking the year off at least. Lindsay Cutsall, who was finally in her third season, starting to become a really solid center back, some physical issues. I'm told it's nothing that requires surgery, but more just rest and recuperation, but she'll sit out the season. Nadia Nadim was traded to Portland. Now she went downhill her second season, and in that trade, they acquired the draft pick that brought in Raquel Rodriguez. Rodriguez is a rookie right out of college. It's nice to have a rookie that already has not only played in a World Cup, but scored a goal in a World Cup.
Right.
You know, they also lost Cammy Levin, the left back in the expansion draft. They lost the backup keeper, who I think they were pretty taken aback when Tom Sormani picked Aubrey Bledsoe with the last pick in the expansion draft. So let's not kid ourselves. There are certainly players that were in Sky Blue last year. I didn't even mention Haley Hogsma, who, after missing her rookie season with an injury, was starting to come around as a holding midfielder. She announced her retirement. So there's going to be a lot of transition, and the key is going to be working in some new faces and getting some people who haven't been necessarily healthy to a healthier place this season.
Well, speaking of new faces, and this one isn't really new, but it's new to the NWSL, Natasha Kai coming back to play pro soccer after, what, 5 years off? Something like that?
Yeah, 4 years off, I guess. It's been 5 years since she played. You know, I heard about this about 10 days before it was announced, and it was one of these things that was so outlandish that I couldn't believe it. And sure enough, here she is. She's back. And who knows how she is after all this time, but from everything you hear, she really focused herself and got dedicated in terms of getting back on the soccer field and actually being able to make a contribution. And I don't know what role they're going to use her in. You know, Christy Holly has the benefit of being a new coach in the league. And unlike even Matt Beard, who came over from Liverpool, there's really no Christy Holly portfolio for what he'll be like as a head coach. So I think he's keeping tactics and whatnot even more close to the vest than most coaches do anyway. So I don't know how he'll use Tasha Kai, but her energy when she was with Sky Blue the first time and also in Philadelphia and even the national team was really second to none. She was never really a 90-minute player, so I hope they don't think that she'll be a 90-minute player now after 4 years off. I don't know if she'll sell a lot of tickets per se, but I think she'll get the people who are in the stadium a little bit more wound up than they would otherwise be.
She's always been fun to watch, and it's important to note she hasn't just been, you know, sitting around resting the last 4 years. She was playing, what, rugby sevens, I think?
Yeah, she tried that, and there were rumors she was coming. Remember, she got drafted by the Washington Spirit, I believe.
Right.
At the beginning, and there was some speculation about whether or not she would report and play there, and it didn't happen. But, I mean, you know, I thought she was as gone as Mia Hamm or Michelle Akers or anybody else, but here she is back. And you know what? If, like you said, if she's fit, I don't think you lose the ability to score. Remember Tiffany Milbert at the end of her career in WPS?
Right.
She might not have been able to go for 90 and take players on one-on-one, but when she got near the goal and the ball was near her, she could put the ball in the goal no matter what.
Yeah, that experience level. And I think you're right, too, that for the people in the stands, I mean, I bet she'll become, you know, another kind of fan favorite, you know, at Yerkak Field. It's just like, she's just always been fun to watch.
I mean, when she would sit on the bench in WPS, you'd be watching the game, and all of a sudden, the crowd would react to something, and you'd have no idea what the heck was going on, and it was because Kai was up at the fourth official handing in the sub card. I mean, she was actually a player that had a following. I don't know how many specific players have followings around this league, and I don't know if Kai will, but she certainly did in her first go-round. I just hope that the people who were into Kai back then are still into Sky Blue in 2016. I'm not convinced that they are. Maybe if they weren't, they'll come back. I hope they do.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's talk about some of the other newbies who are actually newbies for Sky Blue. I mean, first, the top draft pick for the club, Raquel Rodriguez, as you already mentioned, you know, to get a player who's played in a World Cup, scored in a World Cup, scored the winning goal in the NCAA final. I mean, totally worth an international spot on a draft pick. And I was so impressed with the draft, just how calm and composed and well-spoken she was, you know, that you can see that she's been a leader on the Penn State team, clearly a leader on the Costa Rica team. And that Costa Rica team has made such great strides. So, you know, I hope she can apply some of those experiences to, hey, how can we take Sky Blue, you know, and get them back in the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree 100% that she impressed me. Erica Skrosky, too, their third round pick, I think, also really impressed me with how she handled herself at the draft. And it wasn't in like the U.S. national team. I've got this script that I've been that I've had drilled into my head for the last 2 months, and I'm going to repeat all these talking points when you ask me questions. She actually seemed like she was putting thought into it. And now she has a degree from a U.S. college, so her English obviously is pretty strong. But keep in mind, it's not her first language. It never will be her first language. So I was very impressed. She seemed to really genuinely want to be there. Now, she just recently got into camp, so hopefully that's not a holdup. The Australian players also came in very late. Now, they very well might be the three best players on the team, so it might be easiest for them to jump in right off the bat and play and be good, but it also would benefit some of the other players maybe to have had more time with them.
Right, right. And then what do you think about Leah Galton?
You know, I don't know too much about her. Never saw her play in college, but I have heard positive things about her coming out of preseason. Then again, when you know we have a league where we don't have a lot of reporters who are on site for training sessions and whatnot. So that being the case, everybody looks great, and every single player in the league is healthy. Right? I mean, call any coach, and they will tell you that their entire roster is healthy. So we will see. But I've heard pretty good things so far about Leah Galton. And I think, honestly, they're going to need it. Remember last year, the first dozen games, they only scored one goal or zero goals in every game. They can't afford to let that happen again.
Right. Well, and speaking of healthy players, what's the status of Christy Rampone?
Well, again, Christy Holly, the coach at Sky Blue, was raving to me about Christy Rampone and her fitness and how they've been trying to get her to hold back, and she basically won't do it. Jill Ellis said after the Columbia game in Hartford that she's been in touch with Christy Rampone, that probably what they have now is what they'll go with, but she does intend to bring Christy Rampone into the next camp, which I believe is supposed to be in May, right, where there's not going to be a game. There's just going to be a little camp thrown in there in May. So I would imagine, unless there's a setback, either physically or unless she just looks like she can't play anymore, that she'll be in that camp and at least be given a fair chance to make the roster. But it started, I mean, obviously, when you look at the Columbia games, it's pretty clear at this point that Sauerbrunn and Johnson are back to being the center back combination, and that Sonnet and Engen are 3 and 4 right now.
Right, right. Well, and then let's talk about, you know, Rampone's national team teammate, Kelly O'Hara. Like, you could play her anywhere on the field for Sky Blue. How do you decide where she goes?
I think in the league, she's too good up top to not have her there. Now, I'm getting a feeling, gut feeling, that she might be the left back, because I don't know who goes back there without Cammie Levin. Maya Hayes is a possibility. She played, I think, one game there last year after Levin got red carded in Portland and actually played really well. But Hayes is another versatile player. I just think O'Hara is too good up top in NWSL to put her anywhere else. Usually when you convert a player to the back, it's because they can't score goals, but O'Hara can score goals and create goals at the league level. So unless there's a dictum from the national team that they want her in the back, I personally would never play her in defense in NWSL.
Now, of course, you know, she'll be gone for the Olympics. It's a question mark about Rampone's status for the Olympics. Raquel Rodriguez, Leah Galton, not, because of course England and Costa Rica aren't in the Olympics, but your other internationals, Caitlin Ford, Sam Kerr, playing for Australia, they're likely going to be gone. So, you know, where do you see them on the field when they're here? I mean, what they're contributing, but what happens when they go? Because those are both solid players who have contributed a lot in the first three seasons of NWSL.
That is a fantastic question, and I'm not sure that we have answers right now. Ford is clearly the right back when she's there, and they have a good amount of players who can play defense, but a lot of them are central players. You know, they brought in Ashley Nick, don't forget, who can do central defense and maybe some defensive midfield. Shauna Gordon might be a candidate to play some right back when Ford is not there. There's some tell that they might bring in at least one more player from the outside. I don't know if that'll be someone that can play right back or not. Maybe it'll be an amateur call-up. Sam Kerr is one of the best forwards in the world, I think, already. I don't think she gets enough credit, and she's only just barely starting to be 20, 21 years old. So you don't really replace a player like Sam Kerr either. Ford maybe specifically to her position will be more difficult to replace, but I think the sky is the limit for Samantha Kerr and how good she can be.
And then to flip from the strongest positions to, you know, the back of the field goalkeeper, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, you've got what you said, 90 minutes NWSL experience between those two keepers.
Yeah, Carolyn Stanley got into one game last season when Solo was at the Olympics. And I don't know what happened to Haley Kottmeyer, but she couldn't make the start, and she got a 2-1 win over Boston. Now, Casey was the first-team All-American keeper last year. A lot of people that I speak to who follow college a lot closer than I do were a bit baffled by it. She was, I think, the third keeper picked in the draft after Eckerstrom and Smith. Again, you hear that competition is strong, and that Stanley probably has, you know, the 1 foot in the door to be the starter. The good thing is that they're actually pretty good, and I think central defense is probably their strength. Uh-huh. So maybe they can cover a little bit for a keeper. So let's face it, young keepers are going to make mistakes, and when a keeper makes a mistake, it's a lot more likely to cost you a goal or a game. You know, the closer you get to goal, the worse the mistakes are.
Well, and talk about the new coach. You know, so Gabera's been, you know, their only NWSL coach until now. So, you know, Christy Holly, when did he become part of the club? And, you know, what's been your experience with him so far?
Players seem to really like him. He's been there, so he's familiar with the three-year culture, or more than that. Actually, Gabera's been there since WPS.
Right.
He seems to want to, you know, he doesn't want to say much when you try to ask him, like, what's going to be different about the Christy Holly era from the Jim Gabera era. But I think he wants to have more options when it comes to how the team sets up. So, like we're talking about, and I guess based on my answer to the Caitlin Ford question, maybe I don't think this is necessarily the case at this point. Maybe he'll prove me wrong, but he seems to want to be the type of team where you say, all right, we need somebody to come in off the bench and lock down the right side. We've got someone who can do it. We need someone to come in and score a goal. We've got someone who can do it. Or if not that, you know, they used to move Coco Goodson up from central defense to try to get her head on balls, you know, in the box offensively. So that, I think, will be the imprint that he attempts to put on the team. We'll have to see. Now, I've spoken to some other coaches who said, I have no idea what they're going to look like, because they really don't have any idea what Christy Holly does as a coach. So it'll be interesting to see, but I think he's confident that this team, he's one of the only ones, but he's confident this team can contend for a playoff spot.
And so now we're going into the historic fourth season of the NWSL. I love to keep saying that because, you know, you and I are old enough to remember that inaugural WSA game, you know, April 14th, 2001, coming up on that anniversary. So just a few parting thoughts on the league in its fourth season.
You know, I remember that game so well. I was out that day, taped the game back on the old VHS, tried really hard to avoid the result, which was a lot easier in 2001 than it is right now. And I had been so excited for that game. And I came home and watched it, and the game was dreadful.
Yeah.
Right? It was two teams that were completely disjointed, and none of the other leagues started off that slowly. And that game had 0-0 written all over it until the late penalty, which was Brandy fouling Mia in the box, which led to Bertina scoring from the spot. But the game was, you know, and they just did the 20th anniversary of the first MLS game, and they streamed it right in the middle of the U.S.-Columbia game. And that game, too, was dreadful soccer. But
the halftime commercials were hysterical.
Well, I was at the game, so I didn't see any of it.
But you can go back now and watch it on YouTube.
Well, I'm sure I will at some point, sooner than later. But, you know, it's nice that we've come a long way. You know, the 99 team kind of spawned that first league, and they were the girls next door who could also play soccer, and they showed that, yeah, women can also play soccer. I think the 2015 team, which didn't spawn this league, but it might spawn the stability of this league, showed that women are the, you know, I hesitate to use the word equal in the middle of this whole equal pay for equal play thing, but the 2015 team, I think, showed that women don't only play soccer, but they don't have to be the girl next door. They can be tough and they can be physical, and that really there's not any difference between what women do and what men do when they play soccer, other than the general size and speed of men versus women.
Yeah. So they're all, you know, competitors.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's really nice that we're going into a fourth season. It's really nice that nobody has asked me in at least a year, will the league survive? Will Team X survive? So it's fun. I'm really glad that we're over this hump, and we'll take it from here. And I just, you know, what I really hope is, especially when you're out at a game like the one in East Hartford, I mean, who's going to go to your Sac Field when it's 48 degrees and windy? So you hope the weather gets a little bit nicer, and you just hope that all the people who flocked to these games after the World Cup haven't forgotten, because it's a long off season.
Well, Dan, thank you so much for your comments about the U.S. game and, of course, Sky Blue, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you later in the season.
Sounds good. I look forward to that.
All right, Jen Cooper, the keeper, here with Jamie Goldberg, the Portland Thorns beat reporter for the Oregonian, and we're going to talk Portland 2016. I mean, here's your club that won the inaugural NWSL championship in 2013, but have had a lot of struggles since then. So, you know, Jamie, what's the overall outlook, you think, for 2016? I mean, I know we're still in preseason, but season's about to start, and so many new names and a new coach for this team. So what are we going to see ahead?
Well, I think that there's a lot of promise in this team and a lot of excitement around this team, because they certainly have the talent to compete for the NWSL championship title if they can put it all together. I think that's been the biggest issue with the Thorns for the last 2 years, is that they have the resources, they have the name recognition, players want to come play in Portland, but bringing in the best players doesn't mean anything if you can't put it together, you can't have that chemistry on the field. So I think that's going to be the biggest question mark for them going into the season, because if they do play up to their potential, I think they can be dominant. I think it is going to be a concern that they're losing a lot of players to national team duty at points during the season, both to national team international dates, which I think for the most part are going to be taken off, but also to the Olympics, which I know the NWSL is taking that off, but these players are going to miss games around there just in terms of preparation for the Olympics and once they go into national team camp. I think we'll probably get more into that, but you know the Thorns could lose between 5 and 7 players for that, and I don't think at this point they have that much depth. I think because they have so much turnover from last season, it's hard to really pinpoint right now what type of team we're going to see. I think in their preseason tournament, they showed some promise. I think they had a pretty good game against Seattle, even though they lost with all their U.S. Women's National Team players there. But you can tell that they're still trying to get that chemistry going, still trying to work some things out. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can pull that together early in the year, and if they can start clicking pretty quickly, and what that will mean.
And I think it's interesting that the league scheduled them the first home game for the Thorns. They're hosting Orlando Pride, yeah. Which, you know, the marquee player from the Thorns was Alex Morgan. Now she's, you know, with the Pride. I think that might be a big challenge thrown at them. But at the same time, in a way, it's two new teams. You know, Orlando is just coming together for the first time. And like you mentioned, here's, you know, a lot of new players to the Thorns, and you can see the talent there, and it's just, when are they going to, when is the chemistry going to kick in?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be hard in a way for both teams to scout the other team ahead of that game, because there's a lot of question marks about what kind of style of play they're going to go with, what are they going to do with the personnel, because these are two completely different teams. Orlando's obviously an expansion team, and the Thorns have a new coach, a completely new system, and completely new philosophy, and are only returning really a few players from last season. They've pretty much completely revamped the roster, and I don't think the starting lineup, outside of a few players, maybe 3 or 4, is going to look anything like last season. So it'll be an interesting matchup. I think it'll be interesting to see Alex Morgan return to Portland so early in the season, but I think Thorns fans, honestly, were pretty happy with that trade. Morgan never really performed in Portland. That was just a factor of her being injured. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that Portland's the place that needs a marquee player like Alex Morgan to get the fan support. These fans are going to come out no matter what. You might lose a few hundred here or there, but they're going to continue to get numbers in the thousands. And I actually like the fact that we're seeing Alex Morgan in another club where maybe she can do a little bit more to attract fans other places in the league. when she's not as necessary in Portland just to attract the fans. And I think the Thorns feel like they got a ton out of that trade. I mean, they basically got the mechanisms to get Emily Sonnet, Megan Klingberg, Lindsay Horan. They got the international roster spot to sign Amandine Henri. So I think they're feeling pretty happy about what that trade was able to do for them on the field. And I think it's one of those things that's going to work out for both sides in terms of Morgan also being an important piece for Orlando and an important piece in generating fans for an expansion side.
And I think that's a really great point to bring up is that, and wasted isn't the right word, but it's like when the those original allocations came out in 2013 and you had so many big names in Portland, you know, it's like, they don't need the big names to draw. Like you said, those fans are going to show up regardless. So it's good that you can kind of spread the wealth and, you know, use the power of Alex Morgan's name to, you know, to build a fan base elsewhere, you know. And I think it'll be just as cool for, you know, the Portland team when they play at Orlando. You know, can you imagine for once they'll have an away game where it's, you know, a crowd that's as large as Portland, if not bigger. Yeah. You know, that's going to be a great experience. And as to the trade, I mean, I think Portland is by far the big winner in that to get, you know, Lindsay Horan, you know, and Kling, and then, of course, the number one draft pick. And even though we won't see her till probably after the Olympics, you know, to get a player of Amandine Henri's caliber, you know, to come over to NWSL when you know that she can probably do better in Europe, that's huge. So, you know, the question, of course, that we keep coming back to is how do you balance all of these amazing talents? How do you juggle when, you know, some players will be gone, some players won't, you know, and how do you build a second team of sorts that fills in when they are gone? You know, right now, you've got at least 5 players that'll be gone for the Olympics, at least could be more. I mean, after Ali Long's incredible performance last night, you know, for the national team, who knows if she can sneak into that 18. On the other hand, I think they've done some great international signings that aren't affected by the Olympics. You know, Dagny Brynjar's daughter from Iceland and Nadia Nadim, of course, the trade getting her from Sky Blue. You know, so that at least balances that some. But, you know, I think this is not a new challenge for Portland. You know, they've had a lot of names in the past. But what do you think maybe Mark Parsons can do differently than the previous coaches to keep Portland stable while those big names are gone?
Well, I think the goal going into the season for Parsons was to have less players going to the Olympics than were going to the World Cup. And I think that's going to be a real challenge because things aren't turning out as he planned.
Right.
He went out to get Lindsay Horan and Emily Sonnet, expecting that those players were up-and-coming U.S. women's national team players. They really didn't have a chance to go to the Olympics. And now I would say Horan is for sure going to go, and Emily Sonnet is right on the cusp there and very possibly could go. So there's 2 players they went out to provide depth that they knew were talented, knew were up-and-coming, and they were trying to get them before they finally reached the senior national team level and broke in there, and then suddenly that changed for them. And, of course, with Ali Long now, that adds even more of an issue because I think she is a piece that they're looking at to be a major contributor in the midfield and really provide goals, provide assists, kind of be a very big leader in that attack during the Olympics, during the times the national team players are gone. And after last night's performance, I don't think we can rule out at all that she's at least going to be in consideration to make that Olympic roster. So I think it's going to be very difficult for Mark Parsons. He's continued to talk about how he's been used to turnover in rosters. He's been good at, with his time in the Washington Spirit, being able to bring teams together quickly. And I think they've worked really hard to have decent depth on this team. I do think their depth on paper is a bit better in terms of just the next 11 starters after the national team players are gone. But they don't have that many options. I mean, these national team players are taking up a huge number of the roster spots. So
right.
there's only so much they can do. I think when you look at some of the moves they made, they're obviously trying to get even more depth. Mark has indicated that they're trying to go out to sign one more attacking player at some point. They have a player in camp right now they're looking at on trial, and I think they want to add one more. They just added Mallory Weber, who I think the Thorns were really high on in the draft and really wanted to take her and ended up passing on that because of some of the trades they did. I think that's someone who they see as being able to contribute this year. And I do think Nadia Nadim and Dagny are going to be a huge piece of this. I mean, those are two international players that are going to be in Portland during the Olympics. And I think there's going to be a lot riding on their shoulders. But if all seven of the possible players that could go to the Olympics go, there's only so much I think Parsons can do. And I think it's going to be a real challenge for him.
And it's important to know, too, that it's not just 18 that go, that there's actually four alternates that actually travel. So even if a player, you know, U.S. player doesn't make the 18 but makes that 22, you know, they're still gone for the same period. And I'm glad you brought up Mallory Weber. I thought that was a really smart trade to pick her up. I mean, lots of talent there, lots of potential in terms of what she can contribute in a couple of different positions, you know, on the field. And that's, you know, that's definitely a depth move, you know. And then we haven't even talked about Christine Sinclair, you know, who has kind of like carried this club on our shoulders as much as she's been able to, you know, when she hasn't been gone, you know, with Canada. So, you know, like you mentioned, that the time missed for the Olympics will be less than with the World Cup, but there's still that impact. I also want to talk about the goalkeeper. So, you know, Beto's returning, of course, and Portland picking up Audie Franch, so that you've really got a good situation where either keeper could start. I mean, I would think that Michelle has the edge at this point, but that you're in a good position that regardless of who's starting, you've got a really strong keeper there.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a surprise to you know, us out here that cover the Thorns that they went out for to get such a strong keeper as a backup. But I think Mark Parsons really wanted that to be a role that there would be competition. He didn't want Michelle to just be settled in that starting role and have absolutely no competition with the backup keeper. So I do think you're right that Beto's is going to have the edge. I mean, she was NWSL Keeper of the Year last year, although I think that probably had a lot to do with the fan vote and that header goal pushed her through on that. But she did do a lot for herself last year. I think she really took advantage of the time she got to start during the Olympics or during the World Cup when Onger was gone. And I think she proved herself that she can be a very good goalkeeper in this league. So I think she goes into the season as the presumed starter. But there's going to be a lot of competition on her back. And I think that's hopefully, and I think what they're hoping for is that's just going to push both keepers to get better throughout the year. And it's going to give them options in case of an injury, in case they need that depth. And I think that's probably one of the positions where they have some of the best competition that they've set up. So I think that it'll be really interesting to see if Michelle gets to start all year, if it ends up switching, if one pushes the other, and how it turns into whether it gets either keeper to improve over time.
Definitely, definitely. And then, of course, we need to talk about one of the fan favorites, Mona Shim. You know, she, Allie Long, and just a couple other players, you know, that have been with the club every year since the beginning. And of course, you know, Mona having the great story of, you know, coming on as a tryout player and then very briefly being traded to Houston, you know, the beginning of 2014. But of course, going back, you know, it's like, how important is she in the big picture, especially now that you've got a new coach for Portland?
Yeah, I think she's going to be pretty big in terms of the depth pieces. I can't really see her as someone that's going to be used all that much when you have the full team there. But when they're missing players, I mean, she's a player that can play in the midfield. She can play up forward. Mark Parsons has mentioned that she can. He sees her as a versatile asset. And she's a player that when she's at her best, when she's connecting well, we saw, especially in the beginning of last season, her ability to connect with Allie Long early in the year is what kind of kept Portland in some games. Obviously, things didn't go as planned as they moved into the summer and they lost the rest of their players, but she had a very strong start to the year. So I think she is going to be an important piece. I think they're going to expect a lot out of her in terms of the attack, especially when the national team players are gone. I'm not sure what role she will play. I think there's a lot of competition in the midfield and at the forward position when everyone's there. But like you've mentioned, I mean, the depth is going to be a huge piece of this season, even though the national team players won't be missing quite as much as they missed last year.
Right. And then, of course, we need to talk about their other draft pick, because we mentioned Emily Sonne, of course, number one draft pick. The only other draft pick that the Thorns had, you know, back in Baltimore in January was Mackenzie Berryhill. Now, she's gotten some good time in the preseason games. You know, do you think she's got a chance to be signed by Portland?
Yeah. Mark Parsons said that they are essentially working on the contract right now. He said he asked us, have we announced that we signed her yet, or where are we at with there? So, I mean, I think it's all but formalized at this point. I think they're expecting her to be on the roster. They just haven't officially announced it.
And give me a sense of, you know, the feeling in Portland among, you know, like fans. I mean, is there a buzz that we're about to kick off, you know, season number four, and that it's, you know, hope for the future with a new coach and all these new players? And I mean, we always have to give props to the Rose City Riveters and all the Portland, you know, fans that turn out and really show that there is a demand for women's soccer. And, you know, and I love to give them credit for that. But, you know, what's the feeling out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a buzz. I think the preseason tournament had a pretty decent showing, and I think the fans are ready to see what they're going to get this year. I think, as it turned out, in the end, I mean, the fans were kind of dissatisfied with Paul Riley and the direction of the team. I think Paul faced a lot of challenges with the World Cup, with trying to manage world-class players when you have so many of them and so many options. But it really didn't work out for him here. And I think the fans are excited to see what a new coach has to do. I think they're excited about the new players that have come in. And there's a lot of fans here that know a lot about women's soccer. I mean, they know who Emily Sonnet is, and they know who Lindsay Horan is. That's not something that just the average person on the street would know. And I think they're excited about the players that have come in. They understand that this is a team full of world-class athletes. And I expect there to be a pretty big showing. I would not be at all surprised if it's a sellout on that first game versus Orlando.
Definitely. You know, and I loved that Portland was able to host the first, you know, neutral venue, so to speak, you know, NWSL final. I know it upset a lot of fans, mostly in how it was announced, but I just felt that was a great way to kick off that format, where it's like for a Thursday night, you know, a weeknight during the school year, during busy sport time, you know, that 13,000 people would show up, you know, for a final. And, you know, it's like, again, you know, give props to Portland for leading the way and showing that, you know, there is demand for something like this. So any last thoughts, you know, on this team and especially under a new coach? I mean, he's going to have the same pressure as Paul Riley, you know, and some of the same challenges, but he's a different personality.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're very different. Although, like you said, a lot of the challenges are the same. And until I see it, I'm not completely convinced that Mark is going to be able to navigate them better. I mean, he's trying to set it up so he can, but there are some difficult challenges when you coach a team like Portland. The expectations are very high. Anything less than winning a championship is, I think, considered not living up to potential because of the ability that Portland has to attract world-class players. And I almost think with Paul, he sometimes fell into the issue of having the ability to bring in so many world-class players if he wanted to, that he was bringing in too many. He wasn't paying attention to necessarily the chemistry or how the lineup would set up, and focusing more on bringing in the best talent. And that doesn't always work. I think Mark has done a better job of making sure to bring in players that play in different positions, players that can provide different roles, which I'm excited about. But it is going to be a very difficult challenge for him. And I think the expectations are going to be very high. I think for any coach that comes into Portland, it's a different atmosphere probably than they've ever coached in the past in any other women's team. So it'll be really interesting to see if he can turn this team around this year and actually get the most out of the players he's been able to bring in. But I do think Mark has had a lot of success in the past. I think he has a clear philosophy for this team. The players seem really excited about the direction he's taking them. So I think it'll be a season where we have to watch out for the Thorns.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for all your insight and details about this team. And like I said, I do think it's going to be a really interesting season to watch.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll be talking to you about them again in the future.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, time to wrap it up with the back four. First, some kit notes. If you didn't already see it, check out keepernotes.com for my post on how to get NWSL gear for every team. Not talking about the official jerseys, talking about t-shirts, jackets, polos, hoodies, cinch sacks, all other kinds of stuff. Check it out at keepernotes.com. And I'll end up doing a similar post, hopefully sometime next week, about U.S. gear. All right, if you haven't already heard, USsoccer.com is now selling three-star men's jerseys. So if you want to get one of those, you can get it from USsoccer.com. Of course, my store can add the three stars as well, but there's still no jerseys available with the FIFA patch on it. One note of caution, if you're not sure about the size of a jersey and you're buying USsoccer.com or anywhere really, I would recommend ordering the jersey first without customization, and so you can get it and make sure it fits and it's what you want. And then later you can customize the jersey. Of course, once you have it, it's harder to find places to customize it, but I am happy to help anyone customize a jersey. You can always email jen@soccerforall.com with questions. Next up, of course, it's been a week since the lawsuit from the national team was announced. But if you didn't hear the long rant show that Hal Kaiser and I did for the Keeper Notes soccer show last Sunday, the podcast is up on keepernotes.com. You can also find it on iTunes. Almost the whole show was about WOSO issues. And you can check out the monthly Houston Soccer Podcast, which just posted Thursday, for a fun interview with Australian defender Ellie Brush. Next up, mark your calendar. U.S. women play Colombia this Sunday one more time. Kickoff is 1 p.m. on ESPN. Then the next match for the U.S. team, they'll play Japan on June 3rd in Colorado, and they'll have one more June match to be announced as well. Then there will probably be two more warm-up matches sometime in July before the team heads to Brazil for the Olympics. Last but not least, I'm going to keep on teasing it so I can eventually make myself get the purchase links up on the website. I'm almost finished with an NWSL almanac that will feature the team stats, playoff history, all-time registry, photos, all kinds of great stuff from the first three seasons, as well as the finalized rosters for the 2016 season as soon as those are available. Any questions about that or feedback about that, email me anytime at keeper@keepernotes.com. All right, don't forget you can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes or just find it at howlermagazine.com. And I hope if you like it that you're sharing it with other soccer friends. And as always, thanks to PK Ray for making this podcast possible.